This is Canadian Wealth Wisdom by Tridelta Private Wealth, and in this series, we focus on the financial facelift segment of the Globe and Mail. My name is Kyle Taylor, and I am pleased to be joined by a regular contributor to the financial facelift column, Matthew Ardrey, portfolio manager and senior financial planner with Tridelta Private Wealth. Matthew joined Tridelta in 2016, but has been in the wealth management industry for over 20 years. He holds several industry designations, including the Certified Financial Planner, Registered Financial Planner, Chartered Investment Manager, and Financial Management Advisor. Welcome, Matt.
Thanks for having me, Kyle.
So as part of this series, we are going to be looking at real-life examples, which Matt completed financial planning with individuals and couples, who were then featured in the Globe and Mail Financial Facelift column. I will look to set the stage with who today's couple features and the situation they find themselves in. Matt will then have the opportunity to discuss the plan, options considered, and ultimately what the path forward resulted in. So let's meet Margaret and Norman. Margaret, age 65, recently retired, while Norman, age 62, earns $92,000 plus another $5,000 in royalty income each year. They have two children in their early 30s, with one living at home. They own a mortgage-free condo in Toronto worth approximately $775,000, carry no other debt, and have total investment assets of $940,000, which primarily consists of RSPs and TFSA money. Neither have defined benefit pensions, but Norman does have a small employer-sponsored retirement savings plan, and both will have access to CPP and OAS. Now that's a very high-level description of this couple. What else can you tell me about Margaret and Norman?
Yeah, thanks, Kyle. So Margaret and Norman are really looking for a plan that addresses their specific needs. They are right in that retirement transition zone. Margaret has already retired, and Norman plans to wind down over the year and really end by the end of 2024. So they want to focus on, can they spend $77,000 a year after tax, inflation adjusted, for the rest of their life, plus have another $10,000 a year or so in a travel budget for the next 10 years, trim it down a bit going forward as they have a son out in BC. Really, one of their key questions, and this comes up a lot, is when do I take CPP and when do I take OAS? Does it make sense to delay it? Does it make sense to draw down on the RSPs, which certainly Margaret is already doing as well. They do also want to try to help their kids as well. Obviously, this is something really commonplace with skyrocketing home prices. Can they actually take a bit of their own assets to help their kids out now? They are very conservative investors. They've only got about 45% in stocks. The rest is in cash, GIC, and bonds. So certainly this is something we're going to look at as whether or not will this erode their purchasing power down the road. They do have a home to lean back on. So the home is something we rarely ever sell unless someone says specifically they're downsizing or sell. But what it does is it does help provide a financial cushion. So people often ask, well, what if I have skyrocketing medical expenses at the end of my life? Well, you still have a home to fall back on for those expenses. And, lastly, they are debt-free. This is great. Obviously, we don't want to see people going into retirement with debt if possible. Really allows for financial flexibility with your spending because everything, for the most part, then becomes discretionary. Obviously, you still have food, you still have property taxes, things like that, but everything else is a lot more discretionary.
Is there anything that stood out to you in reviewing their situation? Anything that was abnormal or pretty common?
I wouldn't say it's abnormal, but certainly more on the common side, what we see today is people doing sort of the RSP meltdown strategy where they are drawing down on their RSPs when they're in a lower income bracket. So Margaret is already retired. She's taking over $3,600 a month right now to help contribute to the family living expenses. Now, Norman actually has an advantage that he can sort of reduce his workload and phase into retirement, which is really nice from, it's great for financial, but it's also great on sort of the, person side that they can sort of disengage a little bit slower from work until he merges into full retirement at the end of the year. And then right now, they certainly are pretty diligent savers. They're saving each about $3,000 a year to the TFSA. Norman puts another $5,000 in his RSP, another $4,000 in change into his $3,500 employer match.
So it's impossible to talk about financial planning without some of the key assumptions that you have to make during this process. Is there anything that, any assumptions that you had to make in this process?
Well, first and foremost, some of it comes directly from the participants. So obviously all the savings stop once they retire. There's no more going in there. Margaret did note that she is receiving an inheritance of about $200,000. Now, lots of times we will discount inheritances. Who knows? You're telling me, you know, your parents are, you know, 70 years old and you'll get an inheritance in 20 years. Maybe you will, maybe they'll spend it all. In her case, her mom is pretty elderly at age 94. So certainly there's a little bit more certainty that that is going to happen in the next, we said, 5 years from now. And then we also defer CPP and OAS for them. They indicated there's no risk to their longevity that they know of. So certainly by deferring CPP, you can actually increase their CPP by 42% and the OAS by 36%. This will help mitigate their longevity risk. It allows us to focus on the RSP meltdown in low tax years. And, you know, with almost 80% of their assets inside of RSPs, this is going to be an important consideration for them.
So if they continue as they have, will they reach their retirement goals?
Unfortunately, this is where they're going to fall a little bit short. So, you know, we are doing a plan out to age 95. And we are using inflation on the expenses of 3% a year. And when we start stretching that out over a long period of time, sometimes it's difficult for assets, especially in a more conservative portfolio, to make it work. So they actually fall short in the last 2 years of their retirement. Now, obviously, they could sell their house at that point, downsize, anything like that. But really, my stress comes more into play is when we stress test the plan. So not only do I do a straight line return, which is, you know, hey, you're making 4.5-5% a year straight across, but we all know that's not how markets work. Some years you're up, some years you're down. Some years you have a series of better returns, a series of worse returns. So the financial planning software I use has what we call a Monte Carlo simulator, and it's really a volatility risk analysis. We run 1,000 different scenarios with a range of returns, sort of best returns to worst returns. And we ran it for them. We only ended up with a 41% chance of success. So 6 out of 10 trials didn't work for them. So to me, all of a sudden, that does indicate there is risk to their plan beyond just being able to downsize their house in the last 2 years.
Wow. And where would you want to see the Monte Carlo simulation result be for you to have more confidence?
Really, where I'm trying to aim for at least up to 90% and above. There we know 9 out of 10 times it works. You can be pretty confident that you're in a situation where your retirement plan is going to come out right. Again, yes, you have that condo you can lean back on, but even then, with a result as low as, you know, down around 40%, that's not going to be enough. So we certainly need to look at some other options for them.
So what changes did you end up recommending for them?
So first and foremost, there's no magic wand when we do a retirement plan. You know, we really have to either have them work longer, save more, spend less, or improve the way they invest. So there's no, in their budget, there's no capacity to increase savings. And we also have, you know, a year to retirement. So it's not really going to work. They really don't want to delay retirement. I'm trying not to infringe on their ability to enjoy their retirement. So all of a sudden I've cut out savings, I've cut out work longer, I've cut out spend less. The only thing I have left to work with is trying to make their investment portfolio more suitable for them to actually achieve their retirement goals. So with having 55% of the portfolio in sort of cash and fixed income instruments, they're more on the conservative side, especially for somebody in their mid-60s with, you know, a 30-plus year time horizon. So instead, I really tried to do is focus a yield-based portfolio. So looking at, you know, high-yielding, you know, blue-chip dividend stocks, you know, using fixed income instruments, limited resource capital notes, alternative investments in private debt, private real estate, things that can actually generate a strong yield for them. Because if you can all of a sudden generate a yield of 5%, Well, even, you know, even if you put a 1% fee in there, that means all you got to do is achieve 2% growth for them to hit a target of 6%. And that's really, you know, not trying to, you know, to use a baseball analogy, I'm not trying to hit home runs and strikeouts, but we can just get around the bases just as easy with singles and doubles.
How important in conversation with a couple like Margaret and Norman is around their time horizon? Because I find, I'm sure you see the same or similar, is a lot of people view retirement as the end goal and that's where their time horizon ends. How important is that conversation to educate them on what their time horizon actually is?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, we can't go back to the, you know, old days. You turn 65, you have a pension and you throw your cash under the mattress. It just doesn't work that way anymore. Many people are exactly like Norman and Margaret here. They don't have any pensions. So, and we're living longer statistically. So unless there's, you know, you're telling me there's some impairment on your health situation, we have to assume that, you know, you're going to likely live out a minimum into your 80s and potentially out into your 90s. So retirement is now a third of life. So you've got to make sure that we have assets in place in the correct, you know, asset classes, structures to make them last, especially, you know, everyone's seen inflation over the, you know, the past couple of years. And yes, certainly I don't expect us to have, you know, what we saw in the past 2 years, 8% over a long term. Obviously, you know, we've seen banks pare that down, but to have 3% inflation is, you know, pretty normal, even if the bank target is 2, you know, and to see unexpected spikes in fuel, food, anything like that in the future, we want to make sure that we have a plan that is resilient enough for them to last over the next 30 years. So it is all key to the conversation.
Very good points and a very important one at that. So before we finish off, I wanted to ask if Margaret and Norman's situation is a common one that you come across?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, again, there's all these factors that are in place that, you know, makes retirement successful. You know, owning a home is a great one. Being debt-free is a great one. But, you know, having appropriate savings, having an appropriate portfolio mix. And, you know, certainly we can play around with some of those. But again, you know, it's the idea of how much time do we have to turn the ship? Do I have 20 years? Well, yeah, we can make tiny adjustments and make that retirement plan work. In their case, we've got 12 months or less now to make these adjustments, to make this work. So they're very much more constrained. And this is pretty normal because a lot of people don't think about, you know, having a plan for retirement until they've already decided they're going to retire, you know, which may be a little bit of a reverse way of thinking about it. It certainly would be better to have the plan first and then see how retirement is going to go. But this really sort of, you know, harkens back on, you know, the importance of, you know, having a retirement plan in place. You know, looking again at that Monte Carlo stress test, if they did nothing, there's almost a 60% chance that their retirement's going to fail based on the way they were running things. And so having that plan in place is something that can be your roadmap for the future, that we can base future assumptions on, that we can track against, that we can see, you know, how it goes. And of course, you know, we recognize too that life is dynamic, life changes. And this is where we can also have, you know, that ongoing planning relationship where you can continue to update the plan, make sure that things are running right, make sure that things are tracking right, and make changes where we need to.
And you mentioned one point before we leave off that I just want to touch on is you mentioned the failure of a retirement plan. So what does failure look like for a couple like Margaret and Norman?
Well, it would just be running out of money, plain and simple. You know, in the original projection, they ran out of money at age 93. Well, that's probably not too scary for them because then they would just sell their condo and everything would be fine. But what happens if that number is 83? What happens if it's 78? You know, there could be some really, you know, we're talking maybe more extreme market cases, but we do want to kind of look across the board. And this is why, again, you know, if you're at 90% of it working, you can kind of take out those really extreme outliers and say, you know, yep, in the sort of two standard deviations from the mean, if we take you back to high school math and that bell curve, you know, we can have most of those results falling inside of there. And really, that's what I'm kind of trying to look for them. And then we do have that home as a financial cushion and backup there for them as well.
Excellent. So thanks again for joining me, Matt. That concludes this recording of Canadian Wealth Wisdom, and more specifically, our financial facelift series, a look at real planning questions Canadians are facing today. Thank you.